The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We're starting off with our first article in the Lifestyle Wellness section. Why alcohol is making your menopause symptoms even worse. In a cruel twist, that little glass of wine we drink to take the edge off is messing with our sleep, our mood, and our bones. This article is by Jesse Van Amberg. Not to be a buzzkill, but earlier this year, the U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, M.D., dropped a sobering new report laying out how imbibing alcohol can increase your risk of various types of cancer, including breast cancer. Most women don't know that 16.4% of breast cancer cases can be specifically attributed to alcohol intake, says Jewel Kling, MD, a women's health specialist and associate director of women's health at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona. According to the American Cancer Society, the disease will impact a whopping 1 in 8 women in their lifetime, with a median diagnosis age of 62. There are many other things that can influence your breast cancer risk, but Kling says that knowing that alcohol is a factor in your control can be a powerful tool for prevention. Women in midlife need to hear this message. Research shows that binge drinking among older adults has been on the rise for years, particularly among women. And the menopause transition itself has been identified as a time when women's relationship with alcohol drastically changes. Beyond breast cancer, experts say there are other surprising ways that alcohol can impact your health in the menopausal years. So, how freaked out should we all be about our nightly glass of Pinot? Here's what you need to know. Booze can make menopause worse. Some women lean on alcohol as a way to cope with menopause symptoms, says Kling. But in a cruel twist, drinking might exacerbate those symptoms. For example, having a nightcap may help you drift off, she says, but then it disrupts your sleep and can, for some, be a trigger to make their hot flashes and night sweats worse. Alcohol is also a depressant, says Kling. The happy buzz you get in the moment is often followed by increased sadness or anxiety the next day, likely due to withdrawal. Combine that with the mood changes so common in the menopause transition, and you're setting yourself up for a pretty bad time. Just want to take the edge off? Sorry. If you have anxiety due to your hormones, alcohol is probably going to make it worse, explains Amy Shapiro, a dietitian and the founder of New York-based Real Nutrition. You can feel it in your bones, too. Lower estrogen levels post-menopause make it harder for your bones to regenerate, which can lead to osteoporosis. And research shows that alcohol can increase the risk of osteoporosis even among people who have just 1 or 2 drinks per day. That's a double whammy. And if you drink more than that, you're at higher risk. The bones rely on adequate nutrients like calcium and vitamin D, explains Kling. Heavy drinkers, she says, are less likely to have healthy diets rich in those bone-boosting ingredients. Finding a happy medium. It's challenging to square all of this concerning health news with the reality that alcohol is also a big part of American culture. A lot of times it's used for celebration, for socializing, Shapiro says. adding that having those kinds of enjoyable experiences with others can be beneficial both for your immediate well-being and for your longevity. That's why both King and Shapiro recommend sticking with the official guidelines. 1 serving of alcohol per day max for women. That could be 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces, about a shot, of spirits. Shapiro also recommends looking at the larger context of your drinking. Is having a glass of wine at your book club meeting joyful? That's great. But if your vino starts to feel more like a crutch, it's time to reassess. She also suggests celebrating the other healthy things you do to live longer and combat cancer, like eating veggies, lifting weights, and drinking water. We never say, "Hey, nice job, we had broccoli with dinner," she says. Gold star. How to cut back if you're interested. If you've noticed that you're reaching for a second or third drink every evening, here are some things you can do to recalibrate without losing all of the joy from your life. Make a plan. Shapiro suggests you set a number for your typical week, ideally no more than 7 drinks total. Then plan your week with intention. For example, if you're trying a new cocktail bar on Saturday with your girlfriends, commit to sticking with just 1 drink. Find a substitute. Gone are the days when your only non-alcoholic options were sugary sodas or juices. Shapiro recommends checking out the vast selection of seltzers, kombuchas, and alcohol-free bevies in your grocery store's drinks section. Note, some non-alcoholic drinks have trace amounts of alcohol but are considered safe. Having an alternative makes it easier to break the cycle of automatically reaching for alcohol, she says. Understand your why and make it tangible. Drinking less to live longer is an admirable goal, but it's also kind of far off, which can make motivation elusive, says Shapiro. Instead, set yourself up with a goal so you can feel the benefits of reducing your intake, she says, such as getting up early and refreshed for the gym, regaining mental clarity, or shedding some unwanted weight. We're heading over now to Oprah's intention section. Oprah on leaning into uncertainty. This article is by Oprah Winfrey. Hello, insiders. Happy Sunday and happy belated Valentine's Day. Love has been on my mind this week because of the holiday, of course, but also because of the fantastic conversation I had with Esther Perel on today's episode of the Oprah podcast. As many of you know, Esther is a world-renowned relationship therapist, sexologist, podcast host, and author. It was truly eye-opening to speak with her and to take in her wisdom as she spoke to our listeners about some of their most entrenched issues around romance and intimacy. Esther gave 1 piece of advice that has been echoing in my head ever since our chat. We were talking to a woman who had survived sexual trauma in her childhood, became a fiercely independent single mom, and married a great guy later in life. She had just left a demanding corporate job that was a big part of her identity and wanted to know how she could feel empowered in her relationship despite feeling unbalanced by this transition. Esther's advice to her was to understand that change is inherently destabilizing, and that instead of trying desperately to regain her footing, she should lean into her feelings of instability and lean on her husband for support. This transition was an opportunity for healing, Esther told her, a chance to experience a depth of trust you've never allowed yourself but always yearned for. Wow, that was a powerful realization. It reminded me once again that life's circumstances are always showing up to grow us forward. What's aggravating or causing you agitation and frustration and angst right now? Perhaps you need to stop resisting what looks like a problem. Lean into it and ask my favorite question, What are you here to teach me? Esther had so many interesting things to say about relationships, intimacy, and connection. Watch or listen to the episode if you can, and let me know what you think of Leaning In. Be well, and I look forward to hearing from you. Over in culture, news, and books, Oprah selects her 111th book club pick. I promise you, it's the kind of book you won't want to put down, she says, of Dream State by Eric Puchner. This article is by Charlie Burlock. This morning on CBS, Oprah announced her March 2025 book club selection, Dream State by Eric Puchner. You likely haven't heard of this novel. It just came out today. But you may remember its author from his first novel, Model Home, which was a finalist for the Penn/Faulkner Award. Oprah calls Puchner a master storyteller and describes her latest pick as an exquisite examination of the most important relationships we have in our lives. Dream State follows a bride-to-be, her fiancé, and her best friend, over 50 years, and infinite twists of fate capturing love in all its forms and gradations. With its focus on change, changing relationships, changing identities, and a changing climate, it's a perfect read to carry us through the transition to spring. This is the third book club selection in a new collaboration with Starbucks, which kicked off in December with Small Things Like These by Claire Keegan. The partnership offers the same must-read book club recommendations from Oprah, along with newly formatted author interviews and official Starbucks beverage pairings for each monthly pick. Set in a lush green lakeside in Montana, Dream State goes down perfectly with a matcha latte, fresh, earthy, complex, and sure to leave you buzzing. Oprah and Puchner, and that last name is spelled Puchner, joined a live audience of readers at the Starbucks Reserve store in New York's Empire State Building to discuss the book's themes of time, family, addiction, climate change, and so much more. You can watch the conversation as well as the recent Starbucks interviews with Claire Keegan and Eckhart Tolle now for free on Oprah's YouTube channel. You can also listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more book club content and conversations. We are excited to hear what you think of this epic family saga. The book that accompanies this article is Dream State by Eric Puchner. It's right now $25 at Amazon, $26 at bookshop.org, and $25 at Walmart. Staying in culture and news and books, read the sneak peek of Oprah's 111th book club pick. In the first chapter of Dream State by Eric Puchner, a blushing bride-to-be finally meets her fiancé's stone-faced best friend. And let's just say opposites don't always attract. This article is by Eric Puchner. Cece changed into her bathing suit and walked down to the dock, darting across the highway when there was a gap in traffic. Even at 10 o'clock, there was a steady stream of SUVs and semi-trucks and rental cars. But the rush of the road evaporated as soon as she crossed the boat shed lawn and got to the lake, which steamed quietly in the sun. The water was so bright she had to squint. The Mission Mountains rose to the left of her, bristling with pines, and then, farther across the blue expanse of water, were the ghostly peaks of the Salish Range, hovering in the distance. Before coming here 3 years ago, Cece had never seen anything like it. She'd grown up in L.A., where the only lakes were artificial. The water, if you could even get to it, murky and opaque. The water in Salish Lake was so clear that you could see straight down to the rocks, picking out minnows and lost lures as if they were at the bottom of a swimming pool. The swim ladder shone as brightly below the surface as above it. In fact, the submerged half looked somewhat sharper, truer to the eye, though the two halves didn't match up. It was like a more perfect world that had snapped off from the first. Cece dove into the lake, then popped up, hooting at the cold. In Montana, you hooted in the morning and whooped after lunch. Or so Cece postulated to herself. She enjoyed coming up with aphorisms like this and was indifferent, as a rule, to their truthfulness. She floated on her back for a while in the steaming water, and then climbed up the ladder, shivering in the sun. Vigorously, she grabbed a towel from one of the Adirondack chairs and dried her hair. A man was standing on the lawn, watching her from the base of the dock. She should have been startled, even frightened, except that the lake was so beautiful it seemed somehow rude, ungracious, to imagine anything sinister. The man was wearing coveralls and a trucker cap that looked like it had been chewed up by a donkey, then spat back onto his head. He had one of those pitiable, mold-length beards, less a fashion choice than a flag of surrender. From his expression, it looked like he hadn't seen a woman in a bathing suit for a while. "You're steaming," the man said. "Excuse me?" Cece asked.
"There's some smoke coming off you."
It was true. Steam rippled from her arms. The man kept his distance, standing there with his near beard, and so Cece wrapped the towel around her waist before warily approaching him. Garrett Meek, Charlie's best friend from college. He'd grown up in Missoula and recently moved nearby to an apartment in Woods Bay. Cece, who'd been hearing about Garrett for 3 years, eulogized in comic anecdotes, had not pictured a dour-looking guy dressed like a mechanic.
"I was on my way to work, so I thought I'd stop by and see if you needed anything."
She crossed her arms, partly to hide herself. "You mean Charlie called you and made you come by?" He blushed.
"No, I mean, he called, yes, and told me you might need some help with a few things."
He glanced at her arms.
"You'll freeze to death swimming in the morning. It warms up by noon."
"A person afraid of cold water is a bystander of life."
"Who said that?"
"Me. I did. Anyway, the lake is so beautiful in the morning."
"It's a graveyard," Garrett said. "The native fish have all disappeared. They stocked some lakes with mysis shrimp back in the 80s, and now they've invaded everything."
Cece frowned. Who was this guy? Why he'd moved back to Montana from the Bay Area was unclear, and Cece didn't ask. Charlie had said Garrett was having a bit of a hard time. What that meant exactly, Cece wasn't sure, except that in guy talk, a bit of a hard time generally meant something much worse. It meant depression or addiction or both. She knew a friend of theirs had died in college, a skiing accident. The death had been rough enough on Charlie, but apparently Garrett had never really recovered. Now he was working at the airport, which spoke for itself.
"Charlie had me lower the boat lift for you," Garrett said, nodding at the old Crestliner moored in its slip. "I did it last weekend. It's good to go."
"Why?"
"I think he had the idea I might take you fishing or something, in case you got bored."
"I thought you said it was a graveyard."
"There's more than enough lake trout," Garrett said, frowning.
He said lake trout the way someone might say child rapist. "Well, it's so great to finally meet you," Cece said. "Charlie won't shut up about you, you'll be happy to know, especially if he's had a beer or two." She checked her watch. "I've got the caterer coming at 10:30.
Garrett stared at her.
"We're supposed to discuss some things, the menu, so I'd better get changed."
"Oh, here, almost forgot."
Garrett reached into his pocket and pulled out a plastic baggie, which he handed to Cece. Weed. An eighth or so, it looked like. She used it for a sleep aid, mostly, but of course hadn't dared to take any on the plane. So Charlie had arranged this favor and hooked her up. He was the cardiac anesthesiologist with weed connections. Cece thanked Garrett Meek and offered him some money, explaining that her wallet was in the house, but he mumbled something she couldn't make out, shaking his head. Incredibly, Charlie had asked for this morose baggage handler to be the officiant at their wedding, insisting that he had a way with words.
"The most eloquent man you'll ever meet," Charlie had called him.
Eloquent man, in Cece's experience, tended to be a bit of an oxymoron. She had objected strenuously. But it seemed to mean a lot to Charlie, and Cece was arranging every other detail of the ceremony, so she'd given in. Now she wished she'd stuck to her guns. Just standing in front of Garrett was like a flash of bad news. The light sort of got sucked out of the sky. She wanted to get rid of him, to say goodbye in a way that might discourage further visits. But he was staring impolitely into space.
"You've got an osprey on your property," he said.
"Where?" Garrett pointed at the trees along the beach. Sure enough, wedged in the crotch of a dying pine, as if a beaver's dam had lodged there in a flood, was a tangle of sticks, a nest, from which a beautiful bird gazed back at them. A band of brown striped the bird's eyes, like a tiny blindfold. Its beak, bent down at the tip, seemed to be melting. Peeking from the nest were two chicks, homely as dinosaurs. "How long before they're big enough to fly?"
7, 8 weeks, Garrett said.
"So they'll be there for the wedding," she said happily.
"Unless a bald eagle gets them first."
Cece looked at him. "What are you talking about?"
"Baldies like to pluck them out of the nest sometimes. Makes for a good fight."
"How awful." Garrett shrugged.
"Eagles need to eat, too. They don't have the same, what do you call it, cuteness response."
Did he mean to be so insulting? Cece gazed out at the lake, searching for bald eagles. A stand of cumulus clouds darkened underneath like charred biscuits and banked over the mountains. As she scanned the horizon, a beam of sunlight spoke through one of the clouds, projecting a distant movie onto the lake. Again, this excerpt is from the book Dream State by Eric Puchner, and $25 at Amazon, $26 at bookshop.org, and $25 at Walmart. Parts of this article were edited due to time. This next article is from the Lifestyle Wellness section. Can I take Ozempic for menopausal weight gain? Two weight specialists answer the questions all our friends are asking about the new drugs. This article is by Amanda Robb. My friends are extremely intelligent people who care deeply about very important issues. And lately, most of our conversations wind up something like this. Don't you think the Kardashians must be taking it? I think at least half of all celebrities are taking it. I want some so bad. Oh my God, you don't need it. I've gained 20 pounds since going into menopause, all in my gut. It's for people with serious weight issues. And real housewives. Well, I read that it makes your hair fall out. Well, I read that it's totally safe. Well, I read that the stuff made Amy Schumer so sick she couldn't play with her son, and that it made Sharon Osbourne basically anorexic, and that plus-size model Remy Bader took it, stopped, and gained back all the weight she'd lost and more. Okay, I Googled it. There's like a million telehealth places selling it online, pretty cheap. Wait, what? Do you think we can all get prescriptions? My sister's colorist has a doctor who might hook us up. Shallow as they might sound, discussions like these are playing out across the country, and they actually raise important questions. Okay, some important questions. For expert answers to your friends' group's FAQs about the new weight loss drugs, we went to Judith Corner, MD, PhD, Director of the Metabolic and Weight Control Center and Professor of Medicine at Columbia University, and Sarah Adler, Clinical Associate Professor at Stanford University and founder of Wave Life, a digital intervention with live coaching for mental health service. Can you get too thin from these drugs? Adler, honestly, I've never seen it happen. My experience is that if you want to stop losing weight from taking one of these medications, all you have to do is stop taking it. What about Sharon Osbourne? The talk show host says that she got too skinny on Ozempic and that even though she stopped taking it, she can't put any weight back on. Adler, I won't comment on Mrs. Osbourne specifically. What I will say is that disordered eating and body dysmorphia are highly associated with being overweight, and frankly, with just being female in America. So I think someone with a pre-existing condition could easily wind up taking these medications. I also think that a lot of societal stigma and internalized fat phobia could underlie someone's decision to take a weight loss drug. Bottom line, I think it's possible for the fear of gaining weight back to perpetuate disordered eating or thinking. Will I regain all the weight if I stop taking one of these drugs? Corner. Probably. But I really wish people would put this in perspective. We would never tell someone on blood pressure medication, wow, it's working well, so you should stop taking it. And you stay on blood pressure medication for as long as it is needed, and cholesterol medication, and diabetes medication. Like all those conditions, obesity is a chronic disease. Apply the same logic to the medication you take for it. Can you stop and start these drugs? Corner. If you want to. There doesn't seem to be any negative health effect, except that you will be at a high risk for weight gain. I'll say it again. Obesity is a chronic disease. It only goes away when you treat it. Also, if you do stop taking one of these medications for several weeks, you can't just restart where you left off. You'll have to start at the beginning again. That is, with a very low dose that you slowly increase to therapeutic levels. Can you switch medicines? Corner. Yes, but be careful if you change from taking semaglutide to taking tirzepatide. The dosing will be different. Why? The semaglutide drugs, brand name Ozempic when marketed for diabetes control and Wegovy when marketed for weight control, mimic one hormone that makes you feel full faster longer. But the tirzepatide drugs, brand name Mounjaro when marketed for diabetes control and Zepbound when marketed for weight control, mimics two hormones that do that. You really need to work with your doctor to get the maximum benefit from those medications with the fewest side effects. And you really need to have a doctor willing to work with you on this. If you don't have one, change doctors. Can you take them for menopausal weight gain? Corner. They'll definitely enable you to lose weight, but it becomes more difficult to affect the fat distribution changes associated with menopause, which is more fat around the belly. In premenopausal women, belly fat accounts for 5 to 8% of total weight gain, and in postmenopausal women, it accounts for 15 to 20%. Women are always telling me they want their waists back, but we may have to change some of our goals as we get older. Will they make my hair fall out? Corner. Possibly. Hair may fall out with any form of weight loss because the body perceives that as a stress. It's not permanent, though. Your hair will grow back when you stop losing weight, which theoretically will happen when you reach a healthy weight. It's also important to ensure that you are following a healthy and nutritious diet. What if I have only 15 to 20 pounds to lose? Adler. First, let me tell you the current rules. The FDA has approved these drugs only for a very specific group of people. Those criteria are a BMI of 30 or higher, or a BMI of 27 or above with an associated health risk such as diabetes, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol. Now, let me tell you what I think. I fundamentally believe that weight loss is a personal choice, and there are a lot of reasons a woman who doesn't meet the FDA's criteria would want to lose weight. Our fat-phobic culture, the fact that thin women earn more than heavy women, The fact that I don't think there's a woman in America who hasn't had some unhealthy relationship with food and slash or her body. So if you don't meet the FDA criteria, but you want to use these drugs to lose a few pounds and your medical doctor okays it, I'm personally fine with that. But fair warning, no way will insurance pay for your medication. When will less expensive generics be available? Corner. We hope that as more of these medications come out, there will be more competition within the anti-obesity medicine space, and the manufacturers will start lowering the costs. I mean, that's certainly one of the hopes. But semaglutide and tirzepatide are for sale on the internet right now. Pretty cheap, too. Adler. A lot of companies, especially online, are selling semaglutide and tirzepatide made by compounding pharmacies. These are not generics. They're kind of like homemade formulas. The places that manufacture them are not federally regulated, so they might contain the proper ingredients to make the drug, and they might not. They might be properly sterile, and they might not. The doses might be what they say they are, and they might not. You may be getting the right drug, and you may not. Beware of them. Will I ever enjoy food again? Corner. If you take one of these medicines, you'll enjoy food as much as you always did. You'll just be satisfied by eating less of it. Your tastes might change. Some people find they lose their taste for coffee, alcohol, and sweets. One problem people do tell me about is that their mom or their grandma gets upset when they don't gorge on the food they make for them, especially on special occasions like birthdays and holidays. The fact is, in a lot of cultures, cooking and overeating someone's cooking is a way to express affection. But I'm confident people can figure out lots of other ways to show love. Parts of this article were edited due to time. We're over in the word of the week. Rust out. Meet burnout's sneaky little sister. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Rust out. It's mid-February with winter dragging on and life just feels meh. Technically, everything is fine. You're not depressed or exhausted. You just don't feel any spark, purpose, or fulfillment. You don't have burnout. You have rust out. Rust out might happen if you're languishing in a tedious job or if your romantic life has hit a wall because nobody's worthy of a swipe, right? It might even be because your life is only work and you have no other hobbies or interests to give you your days more meaning. So what's the proverbial WD-40 for this state? Experts suggest a few easy ideas. Start by examining what you need to change about your life, whether it's looking for a new job or reworking your circle of friends. Then determine what fills your cup. You might have to try something new, like cooking classes, volunteer coaching, or journaling. Finally, ensure your life has a balance of those fun activities plus other fulfilling tasks. That's right, no more working till 9 p.m. and sleeping the rest of the night. Your days will be brighter in no time. We're over in relationships. How to demote a family member without cutting them off. Family estrangements are on the rise, especially, you guessed it, in the past year. Here are expert tips for a gentler approach, limiting contact. This article is by Lisa Arbetter. In the days after the January 6th insurrection, Jeff Wiles, not his real name, yelled at his mother for the very first time. He had called her, and though it wasn't specifically to discuss the events in the Capitol building, he knew it would come up and assumed she would finally see President Donald Trump the way he did. When it was clear that her thoughts on the then ex-president hadn't budged, Wiles, 54, just lost it. "That was a breaking point for me," he says. "I knew I had to limit interactions going forward." Zoom out and you'll see scenes like this happening across the country. According to a 2024 Harris poll conducted right after the November election, Political differences are causing family estrangements at an accelerated rate. Of the 18% of family estrangements due to political beliefs that were reported, nearly half occurred within the past year. It's one trend that crosses both party and ideological lines, driven in nearly equal parts by Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives. Political differences have become core value signifiers, says clinical psychologist Joshua Coleman, PhD. It used to be my kid married a Republican. I'm a Democrat. As long as they love each other, now it's they're the enemy. This negative halo effect in which Republicans and Democrats view those in the opposing party not as people with different views, but as immoral, dishonest, and close-minded has been widening, according to Pew Research Center. In 2022, 72% of Republicans regarded Democrats as more immoral than other Americans, and 63% of Democrats said the same about Republicans. That's a significant increase from 2016, when it was 47% of Republicans and 35% of Democrats. Weil's decision to pull away was more gradual than knee-jerk. Growing up in a small, politically homogeneous town, he shared his family's worldviews. As I got older and started to travel, I was exposed to lots of different ways of thinking, he says. This had a profound effect on me, but I also started to feel lonely around my relatives. Still, Weil's childhood memories of being part of a large, close-knit family kept him connected. He called his mother regularly, visited frequently, and joined holiday gatherings. When his daughter was born in 2006, he worked hard to ensure she had a relationship with her cousins. He wanted her to feel that sense of belonging that swaddled him as a child. Then Trump won the 2016 election. I didn't just disagree with his policies. I found many to be racist and immoral, says Wiles. Worry for his daughter, who is mixed race, welled up inside him. Being a white male, I'll never know what it's like to be her. But to know that my family supported a person who was spewing so much hate for people of color, immigrants, and foreigners, I could not, in good conscience, bring my daughter around most of my family anymore. To be clear, Wiles doesn't think his mother is racist. But the cold reaction he got from relatives when he first introduced his ex-wife, who is black, is never far from his mind. So he began his slow backing away, which started with dwindling attendance at extended family gatherings. Then, during the run-up to the most recent election, Wiles started calling his mom less and making excuses whenever she brought up a visit. He was trying to respect his daughter's own developing views. Now 18, she often says she feels uncomfortable in her grandmother's house, where Fox News is always on. Sometimes she doesn't want to visit, and it hurts both my mom and me, but I can't force her, he says. He tried to talk to his mom about why they were pulling away, but she brushed him off, saying people shouldn't talk about politics and refusing to accept this as a good reason for the partial estrangement. In situations like this, experts say it's important to remain firm. People have to set their own boundaries, says Tracy K. Ross, LCSW, a couples and family therapist. If the other person is hurt or offended by them, you can't take care of that too. Today, Wiles is comfortable calling his mom once a week and seeing her a few times a year, usually for no more than 2 hours. While he pines for a deeper relationship, he accepts that it won't change, so instead he focuses on what he is modeling for his daughter. I try to teach her that you can love someone and disagree with them, he says. It's about finding a balance. It's not easy, but I'm trying. Expert tips for detaching with care. Maintaining family connections while navigating political, personal, or cultural differences requires empathy and flexibility. It's not simple, but it can be empowering, says Ross. He or she and Coleman offer tips to help you stay connected while protecting your boundaries. Number one, establish a new normal. Instead of avoiding difficult conversations, be clear about what the relationship will look like going forward. As Ross suggests, be specific about which topics are off limits. Remember that while it may feel uncomfortable, avoiding these conversations usually leads to worse outcomes. Number 2, start the conversation with care. Open with, "Our relationship is important to me." Emphasize how someone's behaviors make you feel rather than assuming motives. For instance, say, "When this topic comes up, it makes me uncomfortable," rather than, "You always bring this up to upset me." Number 3, show empathy without compromising. If a family member is hurt by your boundaries, acknowledge it without giving in. Ross suggests saying, "I can only spend an hour with you today. I care that it upsets you, but I'm still going to do it because it's not wrong to take care of myself." Number 4, reinforce boundaries respectfully. When someone crosses a line, stay calm. Start with humor or a gentle reminder before escalating. Ross suggests avoiding why questions, which can trigger defensiveness. Instead, say, "You might not realize it, but you just said X, and as we've discussed, that makes me really uncomfortable." Number 5, plan visits with intention. Ross suggests literally planning what time together will look like, how long you'll stay, and what activities you'll do, how you will exit. Number 6, model resilience for your kids. When children are exposed to challenging family dynamics, it's important to balance protecting them and teaching them empathy. Before a get-together, explain in simple terms what they might encounter. For instance, "Grandpa has different opinions than we do. Let me know if he says something that makes you uncomfortable and I'll help." Number 7, accept and process any guilt. Both experts acknowledge that this is a natural feeling when limiting contact. As Coleman explains, doing due diligence, giving clear warnings and changes to adjust can help you feel more confident in your decisions. Ross emphasizes that importance of grieving the loss of the ideal family relationship while remembering that situations aren't necessarily permanent. Focus on what you can preserve rather than what you're losing. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Over in Lifestyle, we have Hotels We Love, Scribner's Catskill Lodge. This mountain retreat is just 2.5 hours from New York, yet it feels like a world away. This article is by Sophia Lodato and Josh Lyles. Overlooking Hunter Mountain, adjacent to some of the best skiing and hiking trails in New York, Scribner's Catskill Lodge is just a 2.5-hour drive from Manhattan and seemingly a world away. While the property, originally called the Hunter Mountain Prospect House, dates back to the 1880s, it was rebuilt as Scribner Hollow Lodge in the 1960s by artist Guy Chirico Sr., with its prime location just steps away from the slopes and hiking trails. The funky mid-century chalet was ripe for imagining yet again when, in 2016, financier Mark Chodock and hospitality veteran Glennon Travis of the Soho House fame took it over. The main lodge, stained black in the Japanese Shosugi-ban tradition, also cherry-picks from Scandinavian and American design traditions. The result is a cozy mashup of calm, Hugi-inspired textures and neutrals and Adirondack rustic charm. Think summer camp for flannel-wearing whiskey enthusiasts. The public spaces have all of the trappings of a fantasy alpine family home. Shelves filled with books and curios, plenty of wood beams and furnishes, roaring fireplaces, and infinite cozy reading nooks, striking that just right balance of minimalism and patina. The effortlessly chic yet totally laid-back rooms are all dog-friendly, and there's an entire zone below the lodge designed just for children. But the way the property is set up, there are parts that are adults only, which means you won't hear other people's kids if you've left yours at home for a romantic getaway. From their 250-square-foot Catskill Queen to their 5-person suites, Each of the 38 guest rooms is artfully designed with dark floors, built-in daybed sofas, throw pillows made of antique Quilom rugs, sweeping windows and soft linens. The striking round suites, the newest additions to the property, are more modern and spare. Sited and landscaped to ensure privacy, the 11 cedar-shingled 12-sided yurt-like rounds give way to spacious, light-filled sanctuaries on the interior. Sunken living rooms with low-slung circular sofas, personal decks, stargazing skylights, and private Japanese soaking tubs that look out over the mountains are the very definition of quiet luxury. With over 20 acres of the mountainside next to the property, you never forget where you are. In the winter, guests can hit the slopes at Hunter Mountain, just across the road. Roast s'mores over the fireplace on the west deck, unwind in the sauna, or have a cocktail in the whiskey lounge. In the warmer months, there is bocce ball on the lawn, nature walks through the meadow, and up the many mountains, trails, dips in the outdoor pool, visits to the garden, and even yoga and meditation classes. The restaurant, Prospect, which is helmed by Chef de Cuisine Alejandro Reyes Herrera, is rooted in seasonal flavors and local ingredients, from fresh sourdough to their market fish. It's an upscale take on hearty mountain food, including an excellent pork chop and burger, as well as bright market salads. Scribner's is the kind of mountain retreat that feels both elevated and approachable, just the way a Catskills escape should be. Over in culture and news and TV and movies, Morris Chestnut tells Gail King why Watson is a must-see for medical and crime drama obsessives alike. Our editor-at-large sat with the actor to chat about this bingeable new series. This article is by Sophia Lodato. What could make a juicy new CBS drama series even better? Two magical ingredients: Morris Chestnut as the powerhouse star, and a plot that combines the depth of a medical show with the twists and turns of a crime-solving investigative series. That's right. Watson is here, and it's a must-see because it has both. Gail King highlighted the new series in her latest episode of The World According to Gail, complete with an appearance from Chestnut himself. He joined Gail for a deeper conversation on the show, in which he stars in the titular role of Dr. John Watson. Watson is an adaptation of Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes, and, fun fact, it's actually the second time CBS has adapted the Holmes stories, the first being Elementary. Chestnut's Dr. Watson is Sherlock's friend and confidant, and the narrator of the iconic original stories. Blending the drama of medical shows with a dash of investigative spy work, Watson is a unique twist on the classic Holmes tales. There's action, there's heart, there's drama, there's humor, shares Chestnut. Plus, all of the medicine is based on real cases and vetted by actual doctors for accuracy. In their candid conversation, Gail and Chestnut discussed everything from the audition process to the medical writing to some of the hilarious thirst twists that have been cropping up. Watch their full interview below and be sure to check out Watson on CBS as new episodes get released. Staying in cultural and news and TV and movies, Gail King tells Morris Chestnut she binge-watched his new CBS show, Watson. Can you blame her? Gail has more on her must-watch list this month. This article is by Gail King. It's a new year, and I hope you've missed us as much as we've missed you. For my first list of 2025, I've got TV on the brain. Premiering on Hulu is the series Paradise, and it's out now. It stars Sterling K. Brown, and let's just say it's full of twists and turns. Another political drama, Zero Day, is coming to Netflix on February 20th, and it's a 1-2 talent punch, starring Robert De Niro and Angela Bassett. And on CBS, Morris Chestnut stars in Watson, which is a blend of a medical drama and solving mysteries. Plus, I must mention that the third season of White Lotus is out on Max on February 16th. My list is not only TV. I have to share that Kane Brown has a new album out, and it's fantastic. His album, The High Road, is available wherever you stream your music. Parts of this article were edited due to time. We're over in food, and this is a recipe for the air fryer. Speedy spinach and ricotta pies. Check out this recipe from the cookbook Too Easy by Donna Hay. This article is by Donna Hay. I can't get enough of these crisp, no-fuss pies with the tastiest, creamy, cheesy filling. Swapping pastry for tortillas is a genius game changer, and the potential to switch up the flavors to suit you and your family or what's in the fridge is even better. This recipe yields 4 servings. 14 ounces of frozen spinach thawed, 2 cups of fresh ricotta, 1 egg plus 2 extra eggs lightly whisked for brushing, 3/4 of a cup of finely grated Parmesan, 1/4 of a cup of finely chopped dill leaves, 2 teaspoons of finely grated lemon rind, sea salt and cracked black pepper, and 4 times 20 centimeters 8-inch flour tortillas, extra virgin olive oil for brushing. And here are the directions. Step 1. Squeeze the excess liquid from spinach and finely chop. Step 2. Combine the spinach, ricotta, 1 egg, Parmesan, dill, lemon rind, salt, and pepper. Step 3. Divide the mixture between tortillas, placing the mixture in the center. Step 4. Brush the edges with whisked egg, fold each of the tortillas in half, and press edges to seal. Step 5. Preheat air fryer to 200 degrees Celsius, 400 degrees Fahrenheit for 4 minutes. Reduce the heat to 180 degrees Celsius or 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Step 6. Brush the hot basket with oil. In batches, place the pies in the basket and brush one side with egg. Cook for 7 minutes each side or until golden and crispy. Sprinkle with salt to serve. Makes 4. Cook's note, you can easily switch up the flavor combos here. Try cooked chicken mixed with sour cream and chives for an almost instant chicken pie. Chunks of roasted pumpkin, semi-sun-dried tomatoes with feta, let your imagination run wild. The recipe book this is from is Too Easy, all the simple shortcuts you need for all the delicious food you want. And it's by Donna Hay. It's $28 at Amazon and $28 at Walmart. Another recipe for the air fryer is the Ultimate Air Fryer Cheeseburger. Make this recipe from the cookbook Too Easy by Donna Hay. Again, this is a recipe from Donna Hay. I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't made this recipe myself. Can you really cook a cheeseburger patty in an air fryer and get perfectly juicy results? Absolutely yes, I'm completely sold. And this recipe yields 4. The ingredients are 1 pound 9 ounces of beef mince, 1 cup of panko Japanese breadcrumbs, 1/3 cup of store-bought caramelized onion relish or chutney, 2 tablespoons Dijon mustard, 1 tablespoon tomato paste, sea salt and cracked black pepper, extra virgin olive oil for brushing, 8 thin cheese slices, 4 burger buns halved, whole egg mayonnaise, butter, lettuce, store-bought tomato chutney, sliced dill pickles, and potato chips to serve. Directions. Step 1. To make the patties, combine the beef, breadcrumbs, relish, mustard, tomato paste, salt, and pepper in a bowl and mix very well. Divide the mixture into 4 flat patties, around 4 3/4 inch in diameter. Step 2. Preheat the air fryer to 200 degrees Celsius or 400 degrees Fahrenheit for 4 minutes. Step 3. Brush the hot basket with oil. In batches, cook the patties for 8 minutes or until browned and cooked through. Top each with 2 slices of cheese and cook for 1 to 2 minutes or until the cheese is melted. Step 4. To assemble, spread each of the burger buns with mayonnaise, top with lettuce, patties, and tomato chutney. Serve with dill pickles and potato chips. Serves 4. Cook's note, you can swap the beef mince for chicken or pork and add whatever toppings you like. And this is from the same cookbook as the previous recipe, Too Easy, All the Simple Shortcuts You Need for All the Delicious Foods You Want by Donna Hay. Again, $28 at Amazon and $28 at Walmart. Over in Oprah's Favorite Things under Tech Gifts, we have Lit Flask Smart Water Bottle. It's $99 at Amazon. The young founder of this company realized that everyone he knew carried three things, so he put them together in this double-insulated, light-up water bottle that includes a Bluetooth speaker and a portable charger. Give it to family and friends because the speakers connect. You'll have an exceptional surround sound experience at your next gathering. It's also available at litflask.com. Another suggestion is the Aromatic Ambiance Home Diffuser and Fragrance Gift Set. It's $229 at Amazon. Why is this sleek diffuser so great? Because you can schedule it to turn on from your phone, which means that when you walk through the door each night, your home will smell like a 5-star hotel. It's also available at aromatechscent.com. And looking at it, it's coming in three different colors, a white, a beige, and an orange. The last suggestion is Apple Beats Studio Pro X Kim Kardashian headphones. They're $350 at Amazon. I'm a fan of Beats over the head headphones, and if someone you know is too, they'll love these, which come in my favorite neutral palette. It's also available at apple.com. The colors are an off-white, a beige, and a light brown. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.